Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Tuesday, the 22nd of February, 2011, the real Washington's birthday. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the World Wide Web at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10. Program re-airs from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL. The lineup for today's show includes a debate over the future of the Environmental Protection Agency, a newsmaker interview with the executive director of the financially strapped Fox Theater Foundation. We'll have a conversation with Jonathan Peck. Mr. Peck heads up the Tucson Urban League. Plus, we talk water issues with Fernando Molina of Tucson Water. The Buckmaster Show is primarily an interview-driven talk show, but of course, there is always room for your listener comments and questions. Call us on the Buckmaster Show live line at 529-3508. Well, should the Environmental Protection Agency be defunded? In an op-ed piece recently in the Washington Times, Steve Malloy argues the EPA is misusing its regulatory power and should lose all federal funding. Mr. Malloy publishes junkscience.com. He's the author of Green Hell, How Environmentalists Plan to Control Your Life and What You Can Do to Stop Them. Also joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line, Dr. Jeffrey Silvertooth, professor and department head of the University of Arizona Soil, Water, and Environmental Science Department. Professor Silvertooth and Mr. Malloy, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you, Bill.
Mr. Malloy, what's your beef with the EPA?
Well, I think over the last 20 years, we've gone into this sort of area of over regulatory overkill, where the EPA's activities are, the costs are increasing dramatically, and the benefits are decreasing dramatically. And I think that what we need is a fundamental rethink of how the federal government does environmental protection. It is no longer 1970, when emissions were essentially unregulated. It is now 2010. Our environment is extremely clean. We certainly do have environmental problems here and there, but by and large, I think most environmental problems can be handled by the states and are being handled by the states. We do need a federal EPA to handle certain multi-state international issues, automobile regulations, Great Lakes, Gulf of Mexico. But by and large, you know, we can cut back on the federal EPA, give the states the authority to handle their own environmental issues. And, you know, that would be a great start on addressing the problems with the EPA's regulatory overkill.
Dr. Jeffrey Silvertooth, professor and department head at the UA Soil, Water, and Environmental Science Department. What do you think of Mr. Malloy's idea to dramatically cut the EPA?
Well, Bill, I fully support the EPA in principle. I do share some concerns regarding EPA regulations, their applications, and the manner in which perhaps they're implemented and enforced. However, we have two different issues here. The reasonableness of the agency and abolishing it are two very different things. And I'd be among the first to say the EPA is not always right, and we have to look for some improvements in application. But I'd also say, number one, private industry doesn't have the short-term financial incentive to implement environmental protection standards without some laws and regulatory mechanisms to look over them. Then you get into the question about having the states control this or be able to manage it at the local level. Theoretically or hypothetically, I guess it sounds reasonable, but you look at it practically, and the states that I work with just do not have the resources nor the capacity to even begin to do that. So I think it's an interesting topic to discuss in terms of implementation, but very difficult to actually carry out, at least from my perspective here in Arizona and the Southwest where I work extensively.
And Steve Malloy, one of the things you point out in your recent op-ed piece is that the economic recovery for this country depends on stopping greenhouse regulations. How big an economic issue is this, in your opinion?
Well, this can be a very big issue. I mean, one of the problems with EPA's greenhouse gas regulation is the agency essentially has arbitrary power. It all depends on how it uses that authority, and no one really knows what's going to happen. And it's kind of an odd situation where EPA is essentially writing laws without congressional input or congressional authorization. You know, a case in point, EPA just started implementing its greenhouse gas regulations. There is a steel plant in Louisiana which has been green-lighted by the Louisiana Department of Environmental Quality, but the EPA is not so sure yet, and we're talking about 1,250 jobs, each paying an average of $75,000 a year. The steel plant is going to be clean for all practical purposes, but the EPA is still out there and may kill the plant using its greenhouse gas authority, which, in my view, is blatantly illegal. And there's no, there's no meaningful oversight over the EPA. Congress is afraid to touch the EPA. The courts have no oversight over EPA. It's just a rogue agency out there acting on its own.
What's your opinion on that, Dr. Silvertooth, that it's a rogue agency acting on its own? Has that been your experience, or have you had a fairly good relationship in your studies with the EPA?
Well, I don't see it as a rogue organization, but coming back to my original comments, Bill, I would suggest that there are cases where you have to look at the reasonableness with regard to how the EPA is implementing and managing a given case-by-case situation. But, I think if you look at it in a broader set, the EPA has to function with regard to regulatory issues associated with the laws that are in place, associated particularly with air quality, water quality, and fuel quality standards. And now, of course, with air quality, we have the CO2 emissions issues that are directly related to that. And I see them having standards that are reasonable and science-based. In fact, another arm of the EPA that I have direct exposure to is that of their research endeavor. And I see that they are conducting research that is sound. They demand good quality work. They demand products, and they want it to be applicable. They also look for consistency among projects and results that are going on in a common issue around the country. And overall, I see them doing a good job. We also see them educating students that go into this field with a good quality background, and not, they're paying for the funding that the students are associated with. They're not educating them directly, we are, but there's a relationship there that's positive, and I see them overall having a positive effect with regard to our understanding of these kinds of situations. But you still come back to the basic question of how good a job are they doing in terms of a case-by-case basis of regulating and implementing those standards.
Well, Mr. Malloy, on a case-by-case basis, aren't they doing a pretty good job, in your opinion, as well?
Well, I think, our environment has greatly improved over the last 40 years. Certainly the EPA has played a role. Private industry has played a role. The states have played a role. Many people have played roles in that. That is not just due to EPA or Congress or the laws. I mean, there's been a mind shift in America over the last 40 years. Now we're at a point where we need to start asking the question, do we really need 1970s-type laws in the 21st century? And that's really the point I'm getting at. And we're seeing right now an agency that is openly defying Congress. And, that just does not fit in with the way we do business in America. That is not a constitutional form of government. Congress has declined to regulate greenhouse gases. The EPA has taken it upon itself to do it. And, EPA's authority is so freewheeling that there's talk of the EPA implementing a cap-and-trade system. None of this is within EPA's statutory authority. No one ever considered giving EPA the authority to regulate greenhouse gases. It's just never been seriously considered. Congress never considered it.
And let's bring Dr. Silvertooth in again from the University of Arizona. Bottom line for you, and we've got about 5 minutes left, Dr. Silvertooth, in your experience, what kind of a country would we be without a regulatory environment like the Environmental Protection Agency?
Well, as Steve pointed out, I think very accurately, I think over the course of the past 40 years, we have seen improvements, and you have seen a change in the overall mindset. And I would agree as well that we have cooperation among industry, other public sectors, private sectors, well with the EPA. And I think overall we're moving in a positive trajectory, but I don't think this is the time for us to back off from that. By the same token, we don't need a rogue agency in any form, whether it be the EPA or some kind of law enforcement agency in another branch. But I do think that as we look ahead, I think we can actually look back to some of the comments of our former President Theodore Roosevelt. He said it probably the best. We have to look ahead, and we not only have to consider what's at stake for us today, but what's at stake for the people ahead of us. As he put it, the greatest good for the greatest number applies not just to the number within the womb of time also, but compared to those that are alive now, they form but an insignificant fraction. So we have to think ahead, Bill, with regard to what we have and what we're doing today. I mean, think about short-term needs, but we have to think about the long-term as well. We've made some progress, as Steve says, and I agree with that. I think we need to maintain that, maintain some control over an agency so that it's not a rogue agency.
Steve Malloy publishes the junkscience.com. He's the author of Green Hell, How Environmentalists Plan to Control Your Life and What You Can Do to Stop Them. Quickly about Green Hell, Steve Malloy, does the EPA play a role in controlling our lives?
Well, yeah, the EPA is the primary, is the governmental instrument among among environmentalists. What Green Hell talks about is how the environment has, environmental protection has gone beyond protecting the environment. It is now a tool by which the American left seeks to control our economy, global warming being the foremost strategy among that. What global warming would do would bring into control of EPA how and when we use energy. It would basically phase out fossil fuels in favor of so-called renewable technologies, all of which require heavy government subsidies. So the government would play a direct role, an even greater role, in how we use energy and in our economic development.
Steve Malloy, I take it you're not a big fan of the global warming argument.
We consider that to be rank junk science.
And let's hear, Dr. Silvertooth, is it rank junk science?
No, sir, I'm of a different opinion there. I think that we have two points that I think we can probably agree on. CO2 emit concentrations in the atmosphere are going up. They were consistent at about 280 parts per million for all available evidence about 10,000 years. And in the past 150 years, we're up now up to 380 parts per million. So that's CO2 is concentrations are going up. The second thing is, too, the physics are pretty simple, Bill. If you put heat-trapping gases in the atmosphere, they're going to trap heat. And that's exactly what we see as well. We see overall global temperatures coming up. So those two things are pretty much a given, in my view. The third part, though, is where the question is, and that's, are these CO2 emissions and CO2 in concentrations caused by people? And that's where we come down to the point of divide among us. And perhaps Steve's on one side, I'm on another. But I would suggest that what was said one time about the Gulf War, if there's a 1% chance that Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, it would justify invasion. Well, I'm kind of on that 1% deal when it comes to this issue. If it's a 1% chance that we're right, that there is an anthropomorphic or a human element involved, we have so much at stake if we don't deal with these problems that it could be catastrophic, not just for us, but for the generations ahead. So I would think it is a real problem, Bill.
All right. Dr. Jeffrey Silvertooth, professor and department head at the University of Arizona Soil, Water, and Environmental Science Department. Thank you very much for being with us. Steve Malloy, I'll give you quickly about 20 seconds if you'd like the last word, sir.
Yeah, I'll just point out, over the last 15 years, when global atmospheric CO2 concentrations have increased by 8 or 9%, there's been no global warming. And that kind of goes against the theory of global warming.
Okay, Steve Malloy, thank you very much. And Dr. Silvertooth, thanks a lot for being on the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks.
Very interesting argument.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And it's about 20 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. We'll talk about the Fox Theater Foundation next. Stay with us.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Let Karimi Oriental Rugs keep your valuable area rugs looking like new with Tucson's finest cleaning, repair, and restoration services. Karimi specializes in restoring antique, silk, and Navajo rugs with 100% satisfaction guarantee. Karimi Oriental Rugs appraises and purchases quality rugs and offers a vast selection of hand-woven rugs from around the world. Be sure to stop by Karimi Oriental Rugs at Fort Lowell and Dodge or on the web at KarimiOrientalRugs.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at VeroMorePizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our citizens realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and create a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in and support of education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's Pima Community College students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a literate, prosperous, thriving Tucson and Pima County. During these extraordinarily tough times, our funding is in serious jeopardy. And as budgets get even tighter, we'll have to cut back services just when people need us the most. So please support us in our ongoing effort to build a better tomorrow. Help us provide the education and resources that the people of Pima County need today. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us on the web at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
Up on 24 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show. The leaders of the Fox Theater Foundation are reporting some rather grim financial news. That is the historic theater downtown Tucson. The venue lost up to about $500,000 last year and won't be able to make its $1.5 million loan payment to Rio Nuevo this year. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is the Fox Theater Foundation Executive Director, Greg Sumberg. Mr. Sumberg, good to see you.
Thank you, Bill. Good to be here.
Tell me about the situation with the Fox Theater financially. Is it as bad as it's being portrayed in the media?
Sure. The situation is bad. It's not, I can't say it's good. You know, we feel like there's a lot of good things happening at the theater. The foundation has been back on its own since July 1st when Rich Singer and the TCC staff went back to their day jobs. And we're doing what we can with limited resources to build the brand back up and get people in there and show people how beautiful it is and continue to make it a part of, you know, kind of the coming downtown renaissance. But obviously our financial troubles precede us and continue.
What are the challenges that you are facing in order to get the Fox into the out of the red?
Well, we came in obviously with this kind of with these financial obligations, and that's a challenge. We're still struggling to break even, and as you know, was reported in the press, we're not there yet. We're trying to build up a program, you know, kind of a calendar with limited resources, which is hard because to book acts, you need money. And just ticket sales are down across the country. I mean, my industry reports ticket sales down 15% to 25% in 2010. So it's a hard time to bounce back. We think we've done a lot of good work and important work, but need the community support. The other thing is, in my business and, you know, in the performing arts, venues, performing arts centers, and historic theaters need community support, philanthropic dollars, to do what they do. We're never going to survive just on the money we can earn.
So the Rio Nuevo board loaned the foundation $5.6 million back in 2005 to finish the renovations to
Correct.
The theater after the fundraising efforts fell flat. So where are we now in kind of getting this financial situation straightened out?
Well, our mission and goal right now is to break even. We want to be in a place where the foundation is not costing the community money or not spending more money than we make, which would include financial philanthropic support from our supporters, members, and donors. The $5.5 million and plus, which we owe to Rio Nuevo, is a separate issue that we're beginning conversations with them about how to handle that. Obviously, when that loan was made, the world was a different place. Economics were different in Tucson and around the country. And a lot of hope about downtown renaissance, which very much now seems to be coming, but it's many years later. So we have high hopes for the Fox and believe in the mission, but it's going to take us a little more time to get there.
You know, it is a great venue. I happened to be down there on Saturday night at the 30th Annual Addy Awards, and I'm telling you, the Fox just has, it oozes historic character. I mean, this is such a treasure for downtown Tucson.
Thank you, Bill.
And tell us about the good things that are going on at the Fox.
Well, we've had, you know, in the 6 months since the foundation went back on its own, we did 80 events, which is by far the most events we've done in a six-month period. Many of those were classic films. We've cut back a bit on the classic films this since the, you know, 2011 began, because truthfully, many of those don't make money. We'd like to run those if we can find the community supporting them, but we got to find the right mix. So we're now trying to book more rentals and more of our own acts, you know, music acts. Tonight we have Joe Bonamassa, maybe the best blues guitarist on the planet right now.
Tickets still available?
Tickets are still available, a few. It's almost sold out, and that show will be amazing. So there's some great stuff coming up. George Thorogood, we got the Septeto Nacional de Cuba with UA Presents is bringing that show to us. George Thorogood is with the Rialto. So we are looking to partner in the community, working with a lot of groups at the university to try and bring acts to the Fox. And cognizant that rentals is a really important part of our programming mix, so worked hard to bring the pricing down on that so that nonprofits and businesses in town can come, like the Addies. I mean, Tucson AdFed said, we want to come in, give us a good deal, make it work for us, and we have.
Your seating capacity is what at the
Just under 1,200.
So it's a medium-sized facility. For
Correct. And when it was renovated, one of the ideas was Tucson has a bunch of theaters in the 500 to 700 range and has the two bigger theaters, the 2,500, give or take, Music Hall and Centennial Hall, but nothing in that 1,000 to 1,500 range. So that was what the Fox was meant to serve, and I think we play that role well. And just trying to build up the programs.
Well, I urge all the Buckmaster Show listeners to go visit the Fox. It is a beautiful venue, and it is a centerpiece for downtown. Greg Sundberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much, Bill. Happy to have your folks down and supporting the Fox.
Thank you so much. Coming up on 30 minutes past the hour, this is the Buckmaster Show.
Tucson's Jolt. Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi says he wants to die as a martyr in his country. He's addressing the Libyan people right now. He says outsiders are provoking protests in Libya.
We defied America from here. America with its power. We defied the atomic, the world atomic powers. We have won. We became victorious.
Gaddafi spoke to a translator. Somali pirates killed the four Americans whose yacht was hijacked in the Indian Ocean last week. Today's been called one of New Zealand's darkest days.
It was awful. It was the most frightening thing I've ever experienced.
Jan Culhane was watching TV when a massive earthquake hit. At least 65 are dead. Consumer confidence is on the rise in the U.S. The Conference Board says its confidence index for the month is at a three-year high. The most trusted name in news. This is CNN Radio.
Ford Service presents Mike Rowe talking about getting things done.
On your car.
On your car.
Yeah, right. Look, you take it to the hardworking Ford-trained service professionals at your dealership.
Get the works. An oil change, tire rotation, multi-point inspection. Now just $29.95 or less after $10 rebate.
Done?
Not yet. Ford Service. Up to 5 quarts oil, taxes, diesel, and disposal fees extra. See participating dealership or visit FordOwner.com for rebate details through 3/31/11.
Done?
Done.
Men, are you urinating more frequently? Do you wake up to urinate? Don't ignore your prostate health. See your doctor for checkups and call for a free bottle of Beta Prostate. Beta Prostate has plant sterols shown to support healthy urine flow and healthy sleeping habits. New customers can get a free bottle of Beta Prostate. You only pay shipping and handling. Call 1-800-747-0319. Call now and try Beta Prostate for free. Call 1-800-747-0319. That's 1-800-747-0319.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
It is coming up on 35 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the web at our fine website, buckmastershow.com. One more note on the Fox Theater. We're just talking with the Fox Theater Foundation Executive Director, Greg Sumberg, and we ran out of time. And I do want to mention that their big event is coming up on Sunday night. That is Oscar night in America, the red carpet. They roll it out at 5 p.m. It's going to be a fun night, and it is a fundraiser for the Fox Theater Foundation, and these people need your help because, as we all know, we're just talking about the Fox's rather grim financial situation. Tickets are available at the Fox Theater box office. You can go online, foxtucson.org, for more information about that. But now we turn our attention to the Tucson Urban League, and it is celebrating its 40th anniversary in Tucson on March the 5th with a gala celebration at the Westin La Paloma Resort. The league will be launching what it's calling I Am Empowered Tucson campaign at that time. Jonathan Peck is the president and CEO of the Tucson Urban League, whose mission is to assist and empower neighborhoods, communities, families, and individuals to secure economic self-reliance and to coexist in an integrated and pluralistic society. Jonathan Peck, it's good to see you.
You too, Bill.
13 months on your job.
Absolutely. And congratulations on this.
The show is going very well. And we talked when you first came to town over on the TV side, and you had talked about your extensive background.
Sure.
And we had some mutual things in common.
Chicago, baby.
I grew up in Chicago, and you talked at that time about some of the things you hoped to get going for the Tucson Urban League. Where are we in your mission statement and some of the things that you want to accomplish?
Well, I think we're making tremendous progress at the Urban League. And I think when we talked, it wasn't just the hope for the Urban League, it was the hope for Tucson. And I think that we are on the move. We're aliving and thriving well, and we're preparing the Tucson Urban League for the 21st century. And we've done incredible internal work, all the operations, everything. Anybody who knows how to run an organization, all those details are going great. But more importantly, we're also engaging with all the stakeholders across the city of Tucson in the work of the Urban League. The Urban League has 40 years. And one of the things I've learned in the last 13 months is the rich history, the unassuming history of the Urban League. You know, even my pool guy used to work at the Urban League. And so I find when I travel across the city and people find, oh, I saw you, I heard about you, blah, 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 about the new Urban League. It's incredible how many people, the hundreds of thousands, 100,000s of people that received support and assistance from the Tucson Urban League. It's also phenomenal, the thousands of individuals that actually worked at the Urban League to make that a reality. So what you have is a Tucson story. You have a narrative where you've got Tucsonans helping Tucsonans behind the scenes. We're not the glamorous, number one charity of Tucson, and we don't pretend to be. But our niche is being in the background, working every day, helping low-income families, helping every single person that can come through our doors, from childcare to senior citizen, health and wellness services. We have 20 programs that we service, and we service thousands upon thousands of people every day, from utility assistance, you name it. And so that's what the Urban League movement is about. It's about empowering people, lifting people out of poverty, and giving people that opportunity to improve their quality of life.
Yeah, I know since the January 8th Tucson shootings, you've been speaking out in the community, and a lot of leaders have in Tucson, talking about this call for a more civil tone in our dealings with people. Give us some of your thoughts.
First of all, I think what happened was truly horrific, and it was a tragedy. I think that one of the things that, regardless of where you stand on the political side of this issue, I think we need to own up. We need to own the situation. We need to own the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think that I come from a background in Chicago where I've had victims in my same program and shooters.
Yes.
And so when you're dealing with that much pain and that so much tragedy, I think there has to be a level of reconciliation between the families. I think there has to be a level of understanding and realize that, this isn't just an isolated incident. There is something else going on in our community, in our society, that we need to address. And I think we need to open up our eyes, and I think people are beginning to, and realize that Tucson is a growing city. And we need to be prepared to be ahead of that change and to look at where the gaps are. The situation with the shooter, Mr. Joseph Lautner, I mean, if you look at his history, it's clearly that there were signs of this when he was not getting the proper mental health services necessary. And the reality is, if you look at mental health services, the reality is there's a lot of people who need
very troubled, very troubled,
who are very
people.
Troubled, but they're doing okay.
Yeah,
because they've had the right support and the right services from organizations out there that are working tirelessly to make them part of our society. This is the moment where we can rise above that, unite Tucson, and say we will address the root issues that impact our city. We will move into the 21st century over the next 10, 15 years with a broad, comprehensive plan to make sure that every Tucsonan can be part of the society, and we will not marginalize those that are most vulnerable.
We're speaking with Jonathan Peck. He's the president and CEO of the Tucson Urban League. Talk about, you mentioned all the different people who've been touched by your programs. I'm looking at your list here of programs. Employment, you've got employment and training, human resources, housing, early childhood learning. Of course, when I look at this list, it does make sense. You are touching a lot of lives in this community.
Absolutely. There's a lot of, you know, narrative stories. People who are working in the workforce now who received that scholarship or who received that entry-level position, that internship at the local business school at Eller, and now are doing great in terms of their career. Families that needed weatherization. There's a lot of people out there, particularly senior citizens, who are living in poverty and don't have the resources to weatherize their house, which would then bring down their utility bills. Well, that's what we do. We're working with that population that a lot of people are pushing to the side and don't see. Tucson's a beautiful city, and it's a great city, and I admire all of the people in the city. And it's very easy not to see sort of the underbelly. It's very easy to enjoy the weather and enjoy the beautiful. I mean, I do. It's incredible, you know, it's compared to Chicago.
Yeah.
But we also have to remember that there are people in need every day, children, youth, and families. And we need to be cognizant that it's our responsibility for those of who have something to give back. Never forget that it's not, you know, given the economy, we all could be in positions that we would find ourselves not in previously. And so I think it's important that the Urban League works in partnership across the city to make sure that we have a strong net in terms of services and addressing the critical needs of our community residents.
How are your financial situations right now?
I think we're struggling like every other organization. I don't think there's not an organization that's not struggling. And if there is one that's not, we should talk to them and find out what their success is.
Yeah, what water are they drinking?
Why are they drinking? Yeah. And if there is water down here, yeah. Hopefully there will be. But I think that we are definitely hoping that our upcoming gala will bring in some unrestricted funds to carry us through into the fiscal year.
You've got a big night planned, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, we do. 40th yeah. anniversary. It's a silent auctioning gala. And we have the Reverend Al Sharpton, who's our keynote speaker, who's a former presidential candidate, will be coming to town. We have Deanna Morgan, who was formerly with Fox 11. She's
right.
flying in to be our mistress of ceremony. And our theme is lighting the path to empowerment. The idea is that we think that every single individual in Tucson can be empowered to not only change their lives, but change the life of their fellow human beings. And so the gala is going to be beautiful. We're launching, as you said, the I Am Empowered campaign. And that's really the framework for the Tucson Urban League going into the year 2025. We want to know, where will Tucson be in the year 2025? Where will our organizations be? Where will our people be by the year 2025? And that campaign is looking specifically at education, housing, workforce development, healthcare solutions. And then we added two local issues to it. It's a national campaign we adopted from the National Urban League, but we felt Tucson, there were some other issues that needed to be addressed. And so we also added for the local situation, criminal and juvenile justice and immigration.
Good idea.
Two
very important. A minute or so remaining, you've had some big changes in your life, and you're not about to jump and leave Tucson. You're settling down here.
Yes, I am.
Tell us about personally how things have gone for you.
Oh, I'm tired. I can tell you that much.
But you've got some big changes.
Absolutely. I recently got married.
Congratulations.
To my wife, Zelda Harris.
Uh-huh.
She is the rock and the foundation of my life. And then we just recently had a baby, Jonathan Russell Ton Harris Peck. He will be 5 months on the 24th of February. And he is keeping us up.
Keeps you up late at night.
Absolutely.
Yeah, remaining minute or so, how do people find out more information
about the gala? You can go to our website,
www.tucsonurbanleague.org.
Tickets, you can buy tickets online. And we're hoping that everybody will come out and welcome the Reverend Sharpton to Tucson. This isn't just for the Urban League. This is for Tucson. Let's welcome him and show him what Tucson can be in terms of our diversity, in terms of our richness, and the people of Tucson.
Well, we want to wish you all the best. Jonathan Peck is the president and CEO of the Tucson Urban League. And the Tucson Urban League, as we've been saying, has touched so many lives in this community. And congratulations on the great work that you and your colleagues do over there, Jonathan.
Thank you, and congratulations on your new venture.
Thank you. The Buckmaster Show, 45 minutes now past the hour, and we're going to be talking. Jonathan and I were mentioning water. We're going to talk water
right.
with the Tucson Water. Fernando Molina will be with us. That's coming up next.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
From antique to contemporary, Persia to Pakistan, Tibet to Turkey, Karimi Oriental Rugs brings the world to Tucson at the corner of East Fort Lowell and Dodge. Owner-operator Amir Karimi personally selects the world's finest exquisite hand-woven rugs. Sale, purchase, wash, repair, restore, and appraise. East Fort Lowell and Dodge for Karimi Oriental Rugs and KarimiOrientalRugs.com. And it's about 49 minutes past the hour. This is the Buckmaster Show. Well, that four-day record freeze that swept through Tucson earlier this month was like hitting a gold mine for area plumbers. They have probably never been busier in their entire careers, but for area homeowners, it really was a nightmare as pipes were freezing and bursting at thousands of residential and business properties. I think everybody in Tucson knows somebody whose pipes probably froze. Tucson water demand went from an average, say, 76 million gallons a day to more than 110 million gallons as the leaks erupted in water pipes and other facilities. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show is Tucson Water spokesman Fernando Molina. Mr. Molina, it's good to see you.
Good morning, Bill. Thank you for having me here today.
Well, we're delighted to have you. Have you ever seen anything like that, that freeze and what it did to town here?
Not to the extent that we saw on that Thursday morning. I believe it was the 4th, if I'm correct. It was quite something. I couldn't even get through to our folks to find out. They were so busy responding.
What have we learned out of that experience?
Well, at Tucson Water, what we learned was that we were prepared to deal with temperatures within the range that we normally have, which is into the low 20s. The teens, though, was something that we've never really experienced, at least not for the duration that we encountered that night. So we know where our vulnerabilities are in our facilities, and we're working to make sure that we don't have those kinds of problems again in the future.
Yeah, the Arizona Daily Star had an article a couple of weeks back. Actually, it was Sunday, February 13th, not that long ago, that the plumbing code perhaps is ill-suited to a freeze here in town, but to change that really could cause even some more problems.
Well, and that's correct, Bill. And I think this all really needs to be looked at in perspective. This is not the kind of temperatures that we're accustomed to here. We just don't see those kinds of things. And so our building codes don't reflect that because we just don't have that kind of climate. I think if you go up into northern Arizona, say Flagstaff, they don't have those kinds of problems, but their building codes are designed to deal with that weather on a regular basis.
Let's talk a little bit about the need for water conservation. It really hasn't changed, or has it changed, I guess, over the years might be the first question for you.
Well, actually, Bill, one of the things that I spend a lot of time talking to people about is the reasons or the needs behind our asking people in the community to conserve water or be more efficient with their water use has changed over the years. In the 70s, it really was a need to actually stop having to ask people to stop using water. We had a lot of growth in the 60s. Our infrastructure had not kept up with that pace of growth. And we actually had areas of town that we simply could not deliver water to during the peak demands, particularly in the summertime. We were a groundwater system, and we couldn't pump the water out of the ground fast enough, and we didn't have the infrastructure to get it to our customers.
And so that's when you, Tucson Water instituted really what's turned out to be an award-winning campaign, Beating the Peak, urging consumers, do not water during peak hours.
Correct. And the initial message back in the mid-70s was never water between 4 and 8. Only water every other day. Never water between 4 and 8. Now, I can tell you that's probably not the best irrigation scheduling method, but it worked. And it really did delay the need to invest in a lot of infrastructure. I think our community responded very well back then. Once we get into the 1980s, things begin to change. We now have the Groundwater Management Act, and this mandates water conservation in certain regions of the state, and Tucson is one of those. Now, we had a head start on everybody, so we actually were doing pretty well. We're still a groundwater system. We've expanded our capability to produce more water and to distribute it, but being a groundwater system, those last few weeks in June before the rains came, we still had to be very careful to make sure that we could continue to meet demands throughout the summer period before the rains come.
Then we got the CAP, Colorado River Water.
Yes, that changed things for us because as originally designed, the plant that would have received the water and treated it and delivered it really had enough capabilities to meet the demands. So even at that point, peaking was not a problem. However, we had our problems with the delivery of water through
that plant.
Oh, boy,
some of us remember those days with the brown water coming out of the tap. Oh,
that's
boy.
That's about a year or two after I started working at Tucson Water. We all remember that very clearly there.
That image won't go
away.
We
ended up going back to a groundwater system as a result of all the problems that we had. So for many years, peaking was still a problem. That's why we've maintained the Beat the Peak program. Now, as we look into this, the 2001, 2002, when we started increased utilization of our Colorado River water, peaking isn't as big of a problem. We still maintain our well field, although we don't use it. So if our demands get up high enough, we can just turn on additional wells. It's still our objective in terms of our water management strategy for the basin is to eliminate or reduce as much our groundwater usage. So that will be changing again, too, as we begin to expand our use of Colorado River water.
Fernando, we have not had a drop of rain this year, 2 months now into 2011. What's our water situation looking like right now? We're in a drought, 12, 13, 14 years, depending who you're asking. We're still really in a severe drought here.
Well, we have to look at things differently now that we are utilizing Colorado River water. In the past, drought meant hot temperatures and increasing water use. So as a groundwater system, we just needed to make sure that we could produce the water that we needed even during those peak periods. Now we have to look beyond our aquifer here. We have to look into the nine basin states that comprise the watershed for the Colorado River, and we need to be aware of climatically what's happening in there. Everybody is aware that levels in the lakes have been dropping. We're prepared. We have a drought response plan in place, and we move it along as appropriate based on what the stage drought that is being declared. And it's also consistent with our long-term conservation program, or what I tend to refer to it as a water efficiency program, because we're not really asking people not to use water anymore like we did in the 70s. It's really more about use it efficiently. And so that really in the long term is everything that we try to do is towards that goal, and anything we do to become more efficient in the long term certainly helps us prepare to respond to drought.
And you can save money, can't you, with some of these efficiency programs that Tucson Water is offering?
Yes. We went through a process several years ago working with a community conservation task force. We had representatives from throughout the community, different sectors of the community working with us to identify measures that were technologically focused. So it wasn't more looking at education programs and changing behaviors. It was actually changing technologies out there that would allow us to become more efficient. So out of that came a list of programs that we have been implementing now for 4 years. I think this will be our fourth year. A lot of rebate programs. A lot of them focus on toilets. That's actually one of the biggest water users where we have tremendous opportunity for increasing our efficiency in water use there. So a lot of them are focused towards that. And we have a few that also look at outdoor water use as well.
So you can save a little money.
Yes. The interesting thing about these programs is that we have done economic analysis. So we identified the measures working with this committee. And we did an economic analysis to make sure that the cost benefit was there to our customers. We want to make sure that the money that we're, that our ratepayers' money that we're spending is really getting them the benefit they deserve from this investment.
And all that information is on your website?
Yes. Customers can go to the Tucson Water website, click on rebates, and get a full listing of all the rebate programs and the policies for participating as well.
Tucson Water had a little bad publicity on Tuesday in the Arizona Daily Star, February 15th, about the wait times. People calling up and getting a busy signal. That can be very frustrating.
It's really frustrating for us, Bill, because we really want to make sure our customers get the best service possible, and the customer service staff is our first line of contact with the majority of our customers. Through a whole series of things, we've had lots of retirements, we've had reorganizations. We basically are short 7 positions in that office. So we've been hiring, we're training. It takes about 3 weeks to train a customer service rep to work at Tucson Water. And we've also done what we can to shift off some of the need to call. There's a lot of, directing people to our website. If they send us information through our website, we can be more efficient that way. And then folks can get the job done, but we still don't have to have that wait time on the telephone.
Only got about a minute or so remaining, Fernando Molina from Tucson Water. With respect to our water use, where are we right now, the total per capita? How much water are we using per day?
Well, Bill, I've been at Tucson Water since 1991, and we are seeing the lowest levels since then, and actually since before then. We're at, if we look at the total per capita use, so all the water being used by industry and residential and commercial, we're at about 136 gallons per person per day. Just the single family residential, if we just separate out that component of water use, we're below 100 gallons a day per person in our service area. That's just amazing. It's just an incredibly low number. And we see this trend happening for a long time. There's been a trend since the early 90s in this decline in per capita consumption or per connection. We attributed a big part of that to the building codes. But the last 3 years, we at Tucson Water, and quite frankly, most utilities around the country are seeing this trend of downward water use, attributing that primarily to the economic situation we find ourselves in.
Fernando Molina, thank you very much from Tucson Water, talking about our water needs here in Tucson. It's always a big issue, always very important. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me here, Bill.
Thanks. We are going to wrap it up on the Buckmaster Show. I am Bill Buckmaster at KJLL AM 1330, and of course, we're always on the web at buckmastershow.com. Have a great day.
Okay, everybody, listen up.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
Tucson's Jolt.
KJLL.
Now you're talking.
South Tucson.